Marek Kosowski. Ja bym chciał zadać pytanie, dwa pytania właściwie. Jedno pytanie dla pana Millera. Dotyczy tego, co pan powiedział o Wingazie i ofertach, które zostały skierowane do Polski, czy dla podmiotów, które odpowiadają za rynek gazu w Polsce, a związane byłyby z możliwościami rozwiązań, prawdopodobnie, ja domyślam się, zwrotnego tłoczenia gazu z kierunku zachodniego do systemu gazociągów polskich. Otóż mówił pan tutaj o ofercie Wingazu. Ja bym chciał powiedzieć, że 4 lata temu z inicjatywy polskiej takie rozmowy zostały podjęte i była deklaracja ze strony Wingazu, również Gazpromu, że to zostanie załatwione i w sytuacjach kryzysowych będzie możliwość tłoczenia gazu z kierunku zachodniego do Polski. Czy mówiąc o tej sprawie, ma pan na myśli jakieś bardzo konkretne rozmowy i jest pan w stanie określić, kiedy byłby finał tych rozmów? One są istotne z punktu widzenia funkcjonowania systemu w sytuacji kryzysowej. Z takimi sytuacjami mieliśmy miejsce w przeszłości. I drugie pytanie związane z tym, o czym mówił pan Goc, ale pytanie właśnie jest skierowane do pani Mitrowej. Z tej tabeli, która była prezentowana i pokazywała zdolności przesyłowe istniejące i te, które mają być wybudowane do 2030 roku, wynika, że gazociągiem jamalskim do 2030 roku będzie tłoczone 33 miliardy metrów sześciennych gazu rocznie. Co oznacza, że będzie pracowała do tego czasu tylko jedna nitka, bo tyle tą nitką jest tłoczone w tej chwili. Czy to oznacza jednoznaczną rezygnację z tej inwestycji, z inwestycji drugiej nitki gazociągu jamalskiego do 2030 roku? Z informacji, które miałem okazję uzyskać od pana prezesa Ananienkowa, wiceprezesa Gazpromu, przed 2005 rokiem wynikało, że ta druga nitka zostanie pobudowana i że Gazprom przewiduje w swojej strategii inwestycyjnej wybudowanie drugiej nitki gazociągu jamalskiego, tylko przesuwa termin wybudowania tej nitki na między 2014 a 2017 rokiem. Dziękuję bardzo.
Please, in the yellow shirt.
Ryszard Wawrowski, Przewodniczący Środkowy Europejski. Ja bym prosił naszych gości z Niemiec i z Rosji o odniesienie się do kwestii, które tu tylko tak było pobieżnie przedstawione, mianowicie ekologicznych, jeśli chodzi o Nord Stream. Państwa bałtyckie wielokrotnie tę kwestię podnosiły, szczególnie w relacji do tego, co pozostało po II wojnie światowej. Jak ta kwestia jest dzisiaj przez stronę niemiecką i rosyjską postrzegana i jakie kroki zostały przedsięwzięte, ażeby te zagrożenia albo wyeliminować, a w każdym razie wyeliminować, albo ograniczyć. Dziękuję.
Thank you. Take two more questions quickly and then we'll bring it. Well, okay. Then if I just ask your patience, then we'll go through these questions and then we'll come back to the audience. I believe the first question was for you. So.
Okay, so regarding the price and the cost comparison, of course you are right, we should publish some more details. And we will do it because we have now, as I said, finished 80% of our investment decision. So what gives us a very detailed overview of cost to an amount of, I would say, 10,000 euro. And we can offer some figures. If you compare some pipelines, it is necessary to, as we say in Germany, not to compare Apple and Pears. If we take Yamal 2 or Amber, I don't know who has a detailed overview about the cost for Amber, but if we take two pipelines, we should have the same, let's say, level for comparison. It is the amount of gas. So if we take Yamal 2, I do not think that it was planned with a capacity of 55 billion cubic meters as we plan. So a cost comparison is a little bit difficult. We should take the same distance of transport, and we should, as I said, include in the comparison the initial investments and the operational cost for a longer period, because this is a cost calculation which is, let's say, a serious one for investors. But what I regard interesting is that whenever we are in discussion about costs and we are blamed for investing into let's say political adventure, the costs are 3 times higher. We have not got any calculation for a different project. So for us, it would be also quite interesting to get any detailed calculation of an alternative so that we can say yes, and why not having a change of experts? And this would bring this discussion to a much more, let's say, qualified level. The second question about the reversed flow of gas or other connections from the Opal pipeline, as I said, this is a matter of our shareholder Wintershall, therefore I cannot give any details about the present level. What I've seen in the media in the last 4, 5, 6 weeks is a more intensive approach of the state-owned company to the diversification. There were mentioned some intention to plan a pipeline parallel to the motor highway to Austria. There were mentioned some additional work on the connection to Denmark, and in the paper I also got read that the company is open for negotiation with Western partners. So I think there is a new understanding of diversification as a right way to secure the supply, especially in Poland. The third question about environment, as I said, we have done the most comprehensive survey of the Baltic Sea region ever done. We've started, if you come especially to the question of emission, we have started the work already in 2005. And in a step-by-step procedure, we've investigated a 2-kilometer corridor as a first step, then a 150-meter corridor in a second step, and the 15-meter corridor, the construction corridor in the last step. We have used a new developed technology, which was presented to the experts from the Baltic Sea and was very much appreciated. What we can say is that today we have concrete knowledge about every piece of metal with the size of this glass, and I think it will be a big advantage for all the other project to learn about our experience. We have a clear plan of this 3,000 pieces of mast bolts, and there's a very limited number of, a 2-digit number of pieces of munitions which we have to deal with. We have delivered all this information to the national authorities, and we find in discussion with the national authorities of the countries the best way to deal with these pieces of munition. And therefore I can say this is a comprehensive survey. We have a very clear understanding what to do. We have an agreement with the countries where we cross the territorial waters, and I, let's say, grew up with the Baltic Sea, and I hope that all the other projects planned for the Baltic Sea, gas pipelines, wind parks, and sea cables, we do the same intensive research of the sea bottom as Nord Stream has done it.
Thank you. Tatiana, would you like to follow up either on any of that or also on the question of Medvedev's proposals? Mm-hmm. And I believe you all too.
Yeah, okay. I'm not a specialist in environment, so I would not better comment on. Concerning transit consortia, as I said, it's rather old idea. I've mentioned already this proposal on Russian-German-Ukrainian consortium. So this idea exists for many years because actually, it seems to be reasonable that all interested parties should do something to reduce these transit risks. Three parties, producers, consumer, producers, it's Russia in our case, consumers, it's European Union, and transit countries, you know them. And especially it is important in the case of Ukraine because of this pipeline system deterioration that I've mentioned. I don't know at the moment if there are any success in promoting this idea. But anyway, remembering this gas crisis with Ukraine in 2006-2007, actually it seems to me that European Union in that situation, let's say, has washed its hands. Yes, making it full responsibility of Russia to solve this conflict, to solve this problem. But at the same time, it seems that it really should be joint responsibility because consumers are interested in reliable gas supplies, not less than suppliers are interested in these reliable sales. And, speaking about Yamal Europe 2, it was announced several times by Gazprom that they cannot name exact timing of its construction, that it is delayed, but how far it is delayed, nobody knows, for a very simple reason, because gas demand in Central Europe for Russian gas is very uncertain. In the first part of our, in the first session, it was mentioned that Central European countries are nearly 100% dependent on Russian gas. The question is, if they want to get additional Russian gas further on, and therefore, if there is any market for Yamal too, it's not reasonable to invest this money until there are consumers over there. So I think it will depend on the market and on the demand, I mean the timing on Yamal 2 construction.
Thank you. Roman, would you like to comment on anybody else?
I could have two brief comments on what has been said, because I think that we need a kind of clarification. We have been discussing a lot of technical details and economic details, but the whole debate on the Nord Stream boils down to politics, because it's not an issue of what kind of technical solution you plan, but the main question is the issue of credibility and mutual trust, of which Sławomir Jędrzejczyk was talking earlier today. I think that the main problem is that one of the actors involved in this project has been sending very contradictory political and energy-related signals over the last years. I can tell you about an event that took place in Norway on the 25th of October 2007. At 9 o'clock in the morning, President Putin called the Prime Minister of Norway, Jens Stoltenberg, and informed him that Statoil and Hydro are going to be invited to join Gazprom on the development of the Shtokman field. At the very same time, three strategic bombers of the Russian Air Forces went along the Norwegian coast and simulated an attack on the city of Nurvik, where NATO defense ministers were sitting with their Russian counterpart discussing cooperation. What kind of signals do we get when we look at this kind of situation? And this boils down to the perception of the threat in the energy and in the political field. When you discuss a threat, you have to bear in mind two elements. One is the capability to inflict damage by an actor, and then another one is his intention, whether he is willing to do this and not. By building Nord Stream, Russia has got a kind of additional capability to inflict energy damage on some actors in Central Europe. We don't know what are the intentions, and this is the main issue here. Not technicalities, not economic problems, but political problems. This project has been, from the very beginning, seen as a highly politicized project. The fact that the German Chancellor and Russian President assisted with the signing and with the whole deal meant that it was a politically motivated project, and I think that this politicization of the project from the very beginning contributes to many problems. Thank you.
I would like to follow this point. Definitely, the politics was there. I mean, the product in the project from the very beginning. So, as Mr. Godzimirski said, from the September of 2005. But there are, of course, a long list of, as it was said, mixed signals coming from Russian authorities. And including Russian diplomats saying in Ukraine and in Belarus that that when the Nord Stream is built, the Yamal gas pipeline could be closed, or the Belarus deliveries to Belarus could be cut down. So the problem is that this kind of statement contribute to the situation of mutual mistrust, and of course reactions are very, very pragmatic. Countries which suffer from this kind of thinking and the realization of this kind of concept look for other solutions and, of course, enhance their political actions. If we'd like to normalize the situation about Nord Stream and about other pipelines, we should look for the political solution. Thank you very much.
Before we take more questions, or okay, then let's go back to the gentleman in the yellow shirt, and then to Frank, please.
Dariusz Grela z Instytutu Wschodniego. Ja chciałbym wrócić do tej kwestii właśnie upolitycznienia czy nieupolitycznienia Nord Stream, czyli gazociągu północnego. Państwo bardzo dużo już powiedzieli o tej kwestii, ale chciałbym powiedzieć jedno, że inwestycja, ten projekt, ten, który jest z 1997 roku, na samym początku znany był jako szaleństwo. W samej Rosji był znany jako pewne szaleństwo i ekstrawagancja. I w Polsce nadal jest postrzegany jako ekstrawagancja. Dlaczego? Ponieważ do tej pory rzeczywiście, jak Państwo słusznie zauważyli, nie było przedstawionych żadnych pełnych kosztorysów budowy tegoż gazociągu, ale ja uważam, że wszystko może być dopuszczalne, zwłaszcza jeśli jest to interes prywatnych firm. Natomiast my tutaj od początku mamy do czynienia z inwestycją firmy państwowej, która po prostu chce realizować interesy polityczne, a po, powiedzmy, z drugiej strony, w drugiej kolejności interesy biznesowe. I z pewnością Polacy inaczej patrzyliby na Nord Stream właśnie, gdyby to była inwestycja czysto prywatna, ale tak nie jest. Inna rzecz, że Rosjanie w słowach samego prezydenta przyznali, że ta inwestycja, kiedy będzie wybudowana, będzie specjalnie strzeżona przez siły wywiadu i wojskowe. Więc jak możemy tutaj w tej sytuacji ufać, wierzyć, że to nie jest polityczna inwestycja? Mówiąc szczerze, uważamy, że po prostu będzie zbyt dużo linii przesyłowych. Część z nich będzie niewykorzystana i należy się spodziewać, że będą podjęte jakieś kroki, które mogą godzić właśnie w interes tutaj strefy krajów Europy Środkowo-Wschodniej. A biorąc pod uwagę fakt, że nie ma wspólnej polityki energetycznej Unii i prawdopodobnie nie będzie, bo są zupełnie inne rozbieżne interesy wszystkich krajów unijnych, jeśli chodzi o dywersyfikację, więc chciałbym usłyszeć, jak Gazprom jako inwestor państwowy chciałby przekonać państwa unijne, wszystkie państwa unijne, że jest to korzystne dla tych państw członkowskich jako interes, jako możliwa ścieżka zakupu paliwa.
Sorry. Frank, please.
To Tatiana, I think you're perfectly right to criticize the lack of investment of the pipelines in Ukraine, which is indeed a problem, no doubt. But this lack of investment is not just taking place on the territory of Ukraine. There's almost also no investment on the Russian side with the older pipelines. It's even admitted by the Russian experts. And that has a lot to do, I think, with the overall debates going far beyond the gas sector. There's a debate inside Russia to replace even the oil pipelines. by using the tanker transport via the Baltic Sea to close it. Even German gas companies do not expect of having that Russia would maintain the newly built pipelines such as Nord Stream and maintaining the older pipelines. Because there's certainly not the same need for that kind of amount of gas. And even German gas companies do not calculate that and admit that these existing pipelines with no almost investment for restoring them would be invested in the future, because we don't need all that amount of gas. And even the Russian government isn't calculating that way. And that's is also sending signals, I think, here to the rest of Europe. Again, that boils down to the question what the EU gas demand is. And as we have seen, that kind of demand is declining, which has to do with political debates, but overall it has to do with economics, because the coal price is much cheaper. And nobody would replace the baseload using coal by gas, because it's simply too expensive. And the cost difference to coal is too expensive. We have a renaissance of nuclear power. Even meanwhile in countries who had made the same decision like Germany, there will be new nuclear power reactors probably in Great Britain, as well as in Italy, as well as in Spain and other countries. Newly are built also in southeastern Europe, which is also reducing the overall gas demand. Here again, a lot of questions arise: what kind of pipelines will be existing in the future? And given the rationale for building newly ones, which are understandably from the Russian point of view, I don't think that anyone here is, even not in, as I said, in the German gas industry, is really believing that the older pipelines will be maintained or transport as much as gas as before. So here, big question mark. It also boils down to the issue of transparency, but also to the overall demand side. Secondly, that brings me also to the South Stream pipeline. Even Russian experts, independent Russian experts told me there's no gas for the South Stream pipeline. It can only come from Central Asia. But again, as we have heard it by Roland and others, Turkmenistan has signed so many contracts also with China and now with India, and also by agreed to deliver 10 billion to the Nabucco pipeline. It's quite uncertain where the gas should come from Central Asia. For Nabucco, I have a different view that goes to Roland Goetz, because the old question where the gas should come from is largely be solved. There are agreements with Turkmenistan, and according at least to the German company of RWE, we don't need a Trans-Caspian pipeline. There are other technical possibilities, even cheaper ones, to build to transport that gas from Turkmenistan to Baku. Secondly, there are agreements with Iraq as well as with Egypt. And of course, everyone has Iran in its mind when the political circumstances will change. And here again, the prospects are looking forward, go certainly far beyond to see the next years. And what is more important, I think, are the strategic rationals behind Nabucco, as it was the case with the Baku-Ceyhan oil pipeline. As I said before, if you take the LNG terminals being planned in Western Europe, if you take the pipelines into account coming from North Africa, then you will have a highly diversified gas market in the old Western Europe. And the so-called Eastern Europe with the new EU member states, which is not diversified whatsoever. And if that should be taken place, I think we can totally forget a common EU gas market, because this would be so fractured, and it would have tremendous implications for foreign policy. And that is not suitable at all. So here there are strategic questions behind in respect whether we can create a liberalized gas market which is not diversified or is diversified whatsoever. That is the strategic rationale behind those projects, and there are even economic ones which are much more, I think, important than refer to the figure of just the 30 billion cubic meters being planned. And to Mr. Müller, I have the question in respect to the second pipeline being built, which should be filled at least partly from Stockmann. According to all my talks with independent experts, also from big international energy companies who have some kind of experience with these extremely challenging technologies you need for Stockmann becoming operational, I think I know really nobody who is really believing that Stockmann can become operational already in 2013, 2015. They all point out that the challenges we face technologically are so tremendous, as we see it with Snowfield today, which is the most challenging gas project, and Linde, and this project is facing huge technological problems the first years of operation. That's hardly been surprising, given that totally new technologies here being used. All these international experts told me if Stockmann becomes operational, that will be not realistic before 2080, 2020. If that is true, and I don't have the technical expertise, the question is what kind of gas could be used for the second pipeline, or when the second pipeline could become realistic by using Stockmann gas.
Thank you. In the middle there, in the beige shawl. Thank
you. Hello. Agata Woskot from Center for Eastern Studies. So about Nord Stream, I have two short questions. One is about this possibility of pumping gas from Germany to Poland. Are there any comparisons of price of this gas to Polish receivers? How much would cost the gas pumped from Nord Stream via Germany to Poland in comparison with gas from Yamal pipeline? And then the other question is if there are any projects like that of pumping gas also to Baltic states, as you said that this project would increase security of both small and big EU countries and these small who fear, I think this is, for example, Lithuania. And coming back to Nabucco issue, I wanted to ask, all of you, maybe Mr. Goetzi and Mrs. Mitrova, about, there has been discussions before a South Stream project appeared about Russia joining Nabucco project. How do you see this issue looks like right now? What do you think about such possibility? Yes, that would be it. Thank you.
Last question. Two more.
Jeszcze raz Michałowski. Nie mając wątpliwości, że Nord Stream jest doskonałym technicznie projektem, moje pytanie dotyczy, czy istnieje możliwość, żeby strona polska stała się posiadaczką co najmniej 12.75% do 15% udziałów tego przedsięwzięcia. To jest raz. Dwa, czy planowane jest z uwagi na zamiary zagospodarowania północnej czaszy globu ziemskiego w sensie poszukiwań i wykorzystania złóż gazu podłączenie Nord Stream do planowanych, pozyskiwanych złóż pod kołem polarnym, za kołem polarnym. I ostatnie pytanie dotyczy hydratów. Na terytorium byłego Związku Sowieckiego były ogromne złoża hydratów. Zlokalizowały to firmy między innymi pana Krasonia ze Stanów Zjednoczonych. Raporty na ten temat w dziwny sposób utajniano. Co na temat hydratów w tej chwili wiemy? Dziękuję.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Jean Vinoy from the European Commission. I will speak this afternoon and give a broader picture of the discussion we have at the moment, because I think that, of course, we are here in Poland, and that means that we are looking at the Eastern situation. But I think that we have to look first at the European Union situation and the intention, which we are working on all together, to create a true EU-European single market, which means to create all the interconnections needed between the member states to ensure the solidarity between all the member states. And I know solidarity is a word that Poland likes very much, and which is in the Lisbon Treaty. I think that the situation of EU should not lead to the hysteria I sometimes hear in this debate, and which is, in my view, completely useless. And in line with what has been said by Ms. Odebski, I think we are here to have mutual understanding and to be also pragmatic. It's quite clear that any pipeline is a political decision and a commercial venture. If you do recognize that, you are making the right step in the right direction. So it's clear that any pipeline need to be authorized by the political level, and first of all with all the approval procedures which are there to see that the legislation of each country affected or concerned is respected. So let's be very pragmatic. We need more gas in the European Union, first of all because our indigenous production will decrease. So it's clear that we will need more imports. It's clear that diversification of routes and suppliers is the way to proceed, because this is the way you increase your energy security in line with the G8 declaration you remembered us in St. Petersburg 2 years ago. So I think that's what we are doing. And in this respect, then, you should see all routes as being worth to consider and adding to the energy security of everybody, and also looking at all possible sources of gas to look at. And that is where, of course, we need for Central Asia to look also at how you may bring this gas from Central Asia to the European Union in the best possible way. That is where we have Nabucco. So, and South Stream is dealing with Russian gas to bring to new markets which are developing, like Italy and Balkans. So I think that all this seems commercially absolutely reasonable. And at the end, those who will put the money in these pipelines are companies. They have shareholders, they are listed on the stock exchange, and they have to render accounts to those who are investing. So at the end, I think that that is these people who are taking the risk to build the pipeline, and we will see at the end when they will decide to take this risk. And that is where it is. But from the European Union point of view, I think if you look at the present situation, there is no reason to have extreme fear about the problems we are discussing here in a too narrow way, because if you look at the broad picture, things are not that bad. And in any case, prices will lead also to other decisions to find alternative fuels and to save more energy, which is at the end the first thing we may do all together. But please, let's be very pragmatic. And I think there is one thing which has not been said about, and but I read that last week in the transit fee issue. I think that, of course, Poland may see that there is an economic loss of a transit of 55 BCM, for instance, of $800 million a year, something like that. I've seen this calculation, which is based on normal transit fees in other transit countries. And of course, this is also something which may be seen by some interest in the debate. So let's be complete on all the arguments and see where we are. But let's be as pragmatic as we can. And I think we need all, the more pipelines we have, the better it is. And there I agree. And the more interconnections we have to create a true single EU market, the better it is. And there we need still to work also in Poland on this.
Thank you. Who would like to start?
A short reaction. I fully agree that every pipeline has its political context. And well, my point, my argument was my reaction was, rise in reaction to the point that we should distinguish the political arguments from purely business ones. That was only my intention to turn the attention of all of us to the point that all, and particularly this Nord Stream 1, does have a political context as well. And of course, I fully agree with the argument that that we should look for the ways to deal with the fears. Okay, we can say that some of them are not reasonable or unjustified, but still some countries which are members of the European Union perceived certain routes of transportation of gas as a threat for its own energy security, and the Commission is the right body to deal with that and take it into account as a thing which will have to find a response of all the EU. That's all. Thank you.
Some answers. First to the question of Mr. Ummach. There is no direct, let's say, dependence of a second pipeline with Stockmann. So what we are getting is gas from the Russian gas grid, and the capacities of this grid has been discussed this morning. So therefore you cannot, make the second pipe or the first pipe dependent on one source within Russia. What I would like to underline is that coming back to the question of investments in Russia, it is a quite good model for developing stabilized cooperations in the energy field, that at the moment one of our shareholders, for example Wintershall, is a partner of Gazprom in the exploitation of the Yuzhno-Russkoye field. They transport gas together and they sell it together, and I think there's no more stable cooperation in the energy field than in this example, and this might be a model for the future. So therefore also our second pipeline might be fed by gas from Yuzhno-Russkoye or the existing sources, and our pipeline is, at least planned for 50 or more years. Therefore, I have no doubt that sometimes Stockmann gas will be transported via our pipeline. Second thing is the question of the maintenance of existing routes. I think this is not, according to my knowledge, that is not a voluntary activity of an operator, but you have national law and you have national rules how you have to operate, how you have to maintain a pipeline, and how you have to, care for the security. And if we take, for example, the Yamal pipeline, as far as I know, there are two big shareholders in the Polish territory for this pipeline, and this is Gazprom and the Polish state-owned company. So nobody of these operators is interested in, stopping the gas transport. Gazprom would like to make money with existing infrastructure and with a new one. Therefore, nobody would plan to reduce the amount of gas within these pipelines if they have to, get a return on their investments. Then there was a question about price comparison of bringing gas via a reverse flow to Poland. As I said, I'm not involved in these negotiations, and I cannot say what Nord Stream gas costs or other gas. Regarding the security of supply for the Baltic states, I think as an expression of diversification, there are also some interesting projects going on. As far as I know, in May, the Lithuanian government has opened a tender for connection between Poland and Lithuania. So this transboundary, let's say, infrastructure could also be a way of securing supply. And I know that in Latvia there are some different projects for storage facilities, and storage facilities are also a contribution to security of supply. Regarding the question of Poland as a shareholder of Nord Stream, was 12 to 15%. I think, first of all, the Polish government has to be asked whether they would invest into this project. So therefore, I cannot answer this question. This was the question to me.
Okay, so I think all the words about politicized Nord Stream were said already, and I wouldn't like to repeat. Again, I cannot understand how can it be regarded as a threat to anybody's energy security, and again, I don't understand how in this situation Gazprom could convince Central European countries that it is not a threat to the energy security. I really don't understand. Probably you could clarify your question. And concerning investments in pipelines, you see, actually, there was a fault with investments in gas production during 19th and in the beginning of this century, but investments in gas transportation system, they were always rather stable, because people in Gazprom understand very well how dangerous it is not to invest in the repair of gas pipelines. And actually I've met many papers by different experts, not from gas industry, obviously, saying that how can Gazprom invest so much in gas transportation? It should better turn to investment in gas production. Yeah, so it is simply dangerous not to invest in transportation. And of course, Russian gas transportation system, it is getting older, and of course there is a huge need for new investments, and you saw how investments are growing. I've shown this graph. Anyway, it is in rather, let's say, stable position. When I'm speaking about Ukrainian gas transportation system, it is already a disaster. And, therefore, all these ideas with different consortiums were discussed. Gas for the South Stream, where it will come from? First of all, there is a so-called Southern Corridor inside Russia, bringing gas from Western Siberia. As it goes to Ukraine, as it goes to Romania, yes, so it's a traditional source of, it's more than 90% of Russian gas production. And secondly, it will be Caspian offshore, but not Central Asian offshore, Russian Caspian offshore, which is starting production now. And you know, there were recently some new big discoveries in this area, and Lukoil and Gazprom are investing in this production, so why not? And, a few words about Nabucco and Russia journey in Nabucco. Actually, for me, Nabucco seems to be a very, very strange project. It is the first project in my experience which is launched without producers. Only transit countries participate. In the whole natural gas industry history, there are no precedents of gas pipeline built only by transit countries. And therefore you see that it is delaying, simply because there are no resources, there is no resource base guaranteed for this pipeline. If we look at Iran, no comment. It cannot be named a guaranteed resource of supply. Iraq, no comment. If we are speaking about Trans-Arabian gas pipeline linking to Nabucco, again, crossing Syria, I don't know, no comment. And if we are speaking about Central Asian gas, actually I don't know any efficient ways of transportation of this gas from Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan to Azerbaijan except for Trans-Caspian. And I've already said what I think about Trans-Caspian. So we have only Azerbaijan gas, which turned out to be not as big as it was supposed when production at Shah Deniz was only planned, and which cannot make Nabucco economically profitable project simply because there will be no economy of scale. So therefore, I'm afraid that this project, simply for geopolitical reasons, simply for the situation in the Middle East, it is not a project which can happen in a closed time frame. And therefore, for Russia, there are no reasons to join this project if it can start South Stream in rather short term. And it has a very strong interest to this southern European region as a target market. That's it.
Yes, but I think Russia will deliver a gas to Nabucco if it is built by other companies in other countries. Why not? Another point on the Ukrainian gas transport system. As I know, the gas system which is transporting gas from Russia to Europe is in the possession of the Ukrainian state. So he has to invest in this system, and he cannot or he doesn't want to invest. And there was the idea of a gas transport consortium between Ukraine, Russia and Germany, and this project has failed. And the consequence was the idea of building the other new pipelines like South and North Stream. So I think didn't evolve and didn't come into place. One final word from my side to the question of energy security. If you have a look on the map of Europe, Europe is the most secure place for gas import in the world. We get the gas from Norway, from Russia. We get gas from North Africa. We get LNG from the whole Africa. In 10 to 20 years, we will get gas from Iran, maybe from other parts of the world. So, in my opinion, the whole question of energy security, if it is concentrated on the gas question, is wholly exaggerated. It's a false question. In my opinion, as has been said in the beginning of the discussion, we have old questions and old answers, but in my I asked where is the problem? I don't see the real problem in this whole discussion. So I would say the whole discussion should be depoliticized, and if we have this in mind, I think we will make progress in this area. Thank you.
Thank you, Roland. Would anybody else like a final word? Then I won't abuse my position as the chair any longer. I don't want to keep you from lunch, which I think is waiting on the other side of those doors. So I'd like to thank all of our panelists, all of our questioners, and all of you, and thank you.